right. Good evening, everybody. It is 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 0100 UTC, and I am Tomasino, and you're listening to Choose Your Own Adventure. If all is working well, you're hearing my voice, what little of it is left. I got sick with something horrible in the last couple days, and I'm going to try to push through tonight and read you some Zork, Conquest of Gwendor, the book we've been reading for the last 2 weeks. See if we can get through this thing. And yeah, I think let's just dive into it. At some point, the voice will give out, or I will tire, and I'm going to switch over. I've got a little playlist stream to kind of pick up and continue from here and finish out the hour. All right, thanks everybody in Calm, Snowdusk, Cat, Ulcer, thank you, sir, for staying up. It's like 3 in the morning there. Cat, all the way out in Australia, appreciate it. Everybody, Moondoggy, I hope DJ Music Squirrel is asleep, but like I said last week, we're going to try to keep this one family-friendly. I am not going to do Romeo and Juliet tonight. That one got a little lewd, and I think we could pick it up and finish up Romeo's line next week, but I am going to focus on Zork tonight. This one seems pretty family-friendly. All right, here we go, everyone. If you recall, when we last left, Bivitar and Giranda had stopped to look behind a painting of an orange-colored hot air balloon sailing over a wooded area. They took it off the hook to place it on the ground, and the wall behind the painting is featureless, except for the same spatterings of paint that cover the rest of the room. Oh well, it was worth the try. So, you know, unlike last time, we actually stopped to look around the room instead of like just boldly jumping forward, and it turned out completely useless. Although I did have a thought. Why is there paint splatter behind the painting? Did something horrible go wrong in this room and then they hung the painting back up? I don't get it. Anyway, we're on page 63. Here we go. As Bivitar and Giranda continue down the long tunnel, it makes several winding turns and starts sloping sharply downward. A distant roar, like the sound of rushing water, echoes faintly down the passage. The noise grows louder, and soon they come to a branch point, where a smaller side tunnel leads off to the left. The roaring noise emanates from the side tunnel. "I think we should check out that smaller passage," says Bivitar. "So, shall we investigate the small passage, as Bivitar suggests, or do we ignore it and continue down the main passage? What shall we do, Calm?" Let's see if anybody is sitting over in and on radio as well in the IRC channel. It looks like no. Nobody is sitting in there. "Small passage," says Morse Code Media. Thanks for joining, Morse Code Media. All right, let's do the side passage. We're going to go on. And yes, eat the sandwich when you find it. Always. If there's a fork in the road, you take it. And then you eat with it. They enter the side tunnel, ducking slightly because of its lower ceiling. The side passage ends just a few steps later, opening into a huge, high-roofed cavern. A mighty waterfall cascades down the far side of the cavern, forming a swirling pool, which pours into a huge hole in the cavern floor. A rectangular object in the center of the cavern glints in the light of the lantern. The noise of the pouring water is overwhelming, reverberating around the cavern, shaking the walls, vibrating through their heads. Almost instantly after entering the cavern, Bivitar and Giranda clamp their hands over their ears and dash back out. Bivitar almost drops the lamp in his haste to escape the overpowering noise. "Wow," Giranda exclaims, once they're back in the relative quiet of the main tunnel. "I've never heard anything so loud in my life." "Now I know what the expression too loud to think means," adds Bivitar. "Did you see something on the floor in there?" "Yes," says Bivitar with excitement. "It looked like a block of metal. Based on the color, I'd say it was a bar of platinum or silver. That might come in handy later. You never know when you're going to have to strike a bargain with some greedy gnome or something. I'm not going back in there. At least not without some heavy-duty earmuffs." "So, did we find the scroll with the silence spell on it?" "I don't think we did. Do any of you recall finding a scroll last week?" "No." Alright, I think we're going to have to go on to page 70 here. Bivitar and Giranda leave the roar of the side tunnel behind and continue down the main passage. The tunnel, already sloping steeply downward, begins to sloping more and more. To make matters worse, the floor of the tunnel is covered with loose pebbles and other rubble. Each step is dangerous, threatening to send the two adventurers sliding down the passage into the darkness ahead. In fact, this is exactly what happens. Bivitar loses his footing on a patch of gravelly ground. He grabs a Giranda for support, but this merely causes her to lose her balance as well. They begin sliding down the sloping corridor, gaining speed in an avalanche of tiny rocks. Suddenly, they land on a level surface and lie there for a moment, stunned. "Are you hurt?" Giranda asks, recovering first. "I think I'm okay," answers Bivitar, standing slowly, "but the lantern looks damaged. It's pretty battered, and the bulb is flickering." He looks around. "Where are we?" It appears that they're in a small rectangular room with wooden walls. The ceiling above, where they fell in from the sloping tunnel, is open. In the center of one of the short walls is a narrow door. Giranda tries to open the door. It opens outwards an inch or so, then stops. It feels like it's hitting something. She squirms her hand through the crack between the door and the frame. Yep, there's a wall right behind the door. Why would someone build a door next to a wall? Who cares? We better use that magic bead to get out of here before the lamp goes out. There's no other way out. Maybe we can get another lamp from Logramather and try again tomorrow. All right. Do we use the magic bead and give up and go back to the castle of Zork? Or do we stay here in the room with the wooden walls? Let's see what I missed in calm while you guys catch up. Zork Ahoy mailbox. Twisty passages are all the same. Yes. All right. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Snowdusk. My really good radio voice is the graveliness of having a sore throat, apparently. Yeah, write this stuff on purpose. We have a message in an on radio on IRC of all places. Oh no, it's just Snowdusk mentioning that we're over in Con. All right, no lantern. All right, we're going back. Are we actually going back, Adam D? That's the only vote I've heard so far. That takes us back, way back to page 53. Do we want to do that? Stay. Okay. We're staying. We're going to go to 75. Maybe it'll turn out good for us. If the light goes out, we'll surely fall into the bottomless pit. All right, let's not give up so easily, says Giranda, walking slowly around the perimeter of the room. She knocks on one of the longer walls. It sounds hollow, like there's just air on the other side. And it feels pretty flimsy, too. Can we break through it? Asks Bivitar. Let's try. Giranda bangs harder against the wooden wall. Ouch! No, I don't think it's thin enough to break. Let me try, says Bivitar. He runs toward the wall, throwing all his weight against it. He bounces off and lands on the floor, gently massaging his shoulder. I think I'm going to have a doozy of a black and blue mark. Biv, when you hit the wall, it looked like the whole room lurched a little bit, or turned a little bit. If we could get the room to turn 90 degrees, then the door would open up into that space beyond this hollow panel. That's silly, Giran. You can't turn a room. And you can't walk on a rainbow. Now stand up and help me push on this wall. Looking slightly contrite, Bivitar helps Giran to push the wooden panel. Nothing seems to happen. I told you so, begins Bivitar. Let's just try it once more, begs Giran. They try again, pushing on the wall as hard as they can. Slowly, the room begins to turn. After the first few inches, it begins to swing more easily. I'm reminded here of Time Bandits when they're pushing the wall of the kid away from the giant floating head. Scary stuff. Anyway, that should be enough, says Giranda. Let me try the door again. It opens, revealing a somewhat circular area, dimly lit from above. Good thing there's light ahead, comments Bivitar. The lamp is just about to go out. Click! Goes the lamp as it sputters and dies. Bivitar and Giranda enter the circular area. It is a wide ledge extending about halfway across a vertical cylindrical shaft. The walls of the shaft are smooth and shiny, not like the work of human engineering, but as though tremendous heat had melted the very rock of the walls. The shaft extends upward with light filtering down from above and descends into inky blackness. Of more immediate interest is an unusual item on the ledge in front of them. It begins with a straw basket, large enough for several people to stand inside. A metal frame is attached to the top of the basket. A giant bag of orange cloth, apparently empty, lies draped over the side of the basket. The mouth of the bag is affixed to the metal frame. Hanging from the metal frame, just underneath the mouth of the bag, is a metal receptacle about 2 feet square and 1 foot deep. Lying on the ground next to the basket is a small pile of wood, and near the wood is a small box labeled Matches. The walls look weird, says Bivitar, running his hand over the smooth surface. With the usual lack of warning, Giar appears, floating in the center of the shaft beyond the ledge.
One of nature's quaint surprises is that hot air always rises.
The demon floats upward into the shaft and slowly fades out of sight. Look, you can see the sky up above, Geranda points out, indicating a tiny circle of blue far overhead. You know where we are? Exclaims Bivitar suddenly. This is the bottom of an old volcano, one that probably hasn't erupted for centuries. And that's the mouth of the volcano, way up there. That's why the walls look like melted rock, says Geranda, nodding in agreement. It's hardened lava. But there's nowhere to go from here, moans Bivitar. We can't climb these walls. And if we go back, we'll just be stuck in that rotating room. What should we do? Use the magic bead? Maybe we could tear up this old cloth bag here to make a rope, and then use it to climb farther down into the volcano. We have 3 choices. We can either use the magic bead to give up and return to the castle of Zork. We could try to figure a way out of the mouth of the volcano, far above, or we can tear up the cloth bag to make a rope. That is a toughie. Now, I've got an idea here. I'm thinking the fact that it's, what was it, an orange bag that we saw here? It reminds me of that painting that we just saw in the Room of Uselessness. Maybe that's going to turn out to be our way out. All right, folks, what are we doing? What are we doing? Figure a way up. Thank you. All right, we're going to go to page 80. Bivitar studies the basket bag object for a moment, and suddenly his eyes light up. I know what this contraption is. It's a hot air balloon. Right, we can use this wood here to build a fire in the receptacle, which will fill the bag with hot air and lift the basket up and out of the volcano. Bivitar quickly dumps the sticks of wood into the receptacle, and Geranda strikes a match, and it touches it to one of the smaller pieces. In a flash, the other sticks catch fire as well. The bag begins to billow outward and expand. Quick, get into the basket, says Bivitar as it begins to float off the ground. They scramble into the basket. A moment later, the balloon twitches and begins rising majestically up the lava tube of the volcano. They rise swiftly through the dormant volcano and soon emerge out of the mouth into a cloudless, sunny day. A brisk wind immediately begins sweeping the balloon away from the volcano's mouth and over a lush forest below. Distant mountains with jagged peaks swing into view over the curve of the earth. The forest ends, revealing a wide grassland between it and the fast-approaching mountains. I think we should try to land the balloon, cautions Bivitar. Those mountains are getting awfully close. Yeah, but this is such a glorious ride, Geranda protests. Besides, we'll make it over the mountains. All right. Do we continue toward the mountains, as Geranda suggests? Maybe we'll make it over them. Or do we try to land the balloon now? Yep, no more cave. We're going up, 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 up. Up, up and away. That's right. Beautiful balloon. Anybody on Mastodon listening? I don't see anybody pinging me over there either. Crash into the mountains. Ooh, I like that idea. Land, adventure awaits. Well, I think we listened to Morse Code Media last time, so let's go with, we got a two against one. I was going to go with Adam and land, but we're getting a lot of over the mountains here. I think we're 3-2 to go over the mountain. What is this? Did I get a text? Is somebody texting me an idea? No, it is not. It's just uselessness. All right, we're going over. I think we're going to die, and it's going to be great. All right. Yep. Okay, agrees Bivitar. I guess it does look like we're getting a little higher than the mountain peaks. The winds grow stronger and the balloon travels even faster as they approach the mountains. Suddenly, a powerful downdraft catches the balloon and sends it hurtling straight at one of the sharpest peaks. The basket strikes the mountain with tremendous force. Bivitar and Geranda are hurled down the mountainside, their bodies tumbling thousands of feet into a deep canyon between the two peaks because they didn't remember the magic bead that they had in their pocket. Your score is 6 out of a possible 10 points. You probably deserve another chance. Turn to page 80 and try again. You know, it's so silly that we have that magic bead and we never think to use it when we're about to die. All right, Adam D., we're gonna land. On second thought, let's play it safe and land the balloon, says Duranda. Yes, the mountains are a silly place. Aye, aye, Captain, yells Bibitar. He closes the lid of the metal receptacle, quickly quenching the fire. Almost immediately, the balloon begins losing altitude, dropping out of the fast-moving layer of air into a more placid stream. As it drifts lower, it approaches the ruins of a small castle overgrown with ivy. The balloon brushes across the grass and finally comes to rest, and the bag slowly sags to the ground. Bibitar and Duranda climb out of the basket and walk toward the ruined castle. The castle is nearly covered with overgrowth, and many of the walls are starting to crumble. The entire castle is surrounded by a wide moat full of murky water. Occasional bubbles break the surface of the moat. A narrow drawbridge of extremely rotted wood crosses the moat. Lying in the grass near the end of the drawbridge is a canvas sack. While gazing at the ruined castle, the demon Giar appears in the air before them, seeming almost transparent in the bright sunlight.
Within these ruins lie the object of your quest. But to cross the moat you must, past one final spelling test.
Oh, really? We gotta do a spelling test? All right. It finishes the riddle and, as always, fades slowly away. The faint sound of evil laughter lingers for a moment and then fades as well. The object of our quest. Does that mean that the Helm of Zork is inside this castle, Biv? We won't know till we get there, Bibitar replies. Let's go inside. He begins walking toward the drawbridge. Duranda hesitates. That bridge looks like it's about to collapse. I don't think it's safe. Maybe we should just swim across the moat. It's not that wide. What's inside this bag? Bibitar wonders aloud, nudging the canvas sack with his toe. Real quick, cross the wooden bridge, swim the moat, or look inside the sack. I think this is a pretty easy one, guys. Let's see here. What have I missed? Yep, Adam had it right last time. Told us to land. One more point than last time. Yeah, we died at 6. That was not so bad, I guess. Claire, when you... is Claire with you tonight, Adam? I'll mute this cough real quick. Always investigate everything. That's right. All right, 94. Here we go. Bibitar opens the canvas sack and looks inside. It's a parchment scroll with some writing on it. He tells Duranda and begins to read. He looks up a moment later. It's a magic spell that allows the spellcaster to leap tremendous distances. According to the instructions, it can be used on 2 people, as long as they're holding hands. Aw. We could use the spell to leap across the moat. Duranda hesitates. It sounds ridiculously dangerous to me. I say we forget about the spell and just swim across the moat. Or use the drawbridge. All right, I would... It's a love story. Yay, they're gonna hold hands. Aw. Oh, I'm sorry Claire couldn't make it tonight. Maybe she can catch the archive or make it next week. All right, are we using the magic leaping spell? I don't see why we would suddenly give up and go back. Yeah. All right, I'm just gonna keep pushing forward with it. Bibitar and Duranda argue for a while about the relative merits of the drawbridge versus swimming. Eventually, they realize that all their options involve a certain amount of danger, and they decide that they might as well try the magic spell. Grasping Duranda's hand very tightly, Bibitar recites the words of the spell. Voltas hurldo soria boundic breep! A tickling feeling of energy spreads through their legs and other parts. Before they even realize that anything has happened, they are soaring in graceful arcs through the air over the moat. Higher and higher they climb, sailing over the crumbling ramparts of the castle and finally descending into the castle's courtyard. They land gently amidst the rubble, because physics be damned. What a blast! Duranda nods in agreement and begins to look around. It'll take a while to explore this place. Let's split up and search around and then meet back here in 10 minutes? Bibitar agrees with Duranda's suggestion, and they head off in separate directions to explore the ruins. A few minutes later, they meet back in the courtyard. I found a whole bunch of neat things, says Bibitar. The stepladder was in a closet, and I came across an explosive in the armory. He holds up a brick of clay-like material with a fuse protruding from it. And in one of the bedrooms, I found this scroll with instructions for a magic spell that shrinks you down to the size of an insect. Duranda looks slightly downcast. All I found was a stupid letter opener and a doormat. Hey, cheer up. They might be useful, says Bibitar, without much conviction. We've been all over every part of the castle except that tower, says Duranda, pointing to the one turret still standing. If the helm isn't up there, then it's not here anywhere. Then let's head up there and find out. They climb a narrow, winding stair within the tower, lugging the items they found while searching the castle. At the top of the stair, they discover a wide landing. Rats scurry away into the dim corridors of the landing. At the far end of the landing is a heavy wooden door. Vividar tries to open it. Locked, he says with disappointment. They study the wooden door. A small window, barred with iron, is set into the upper part of the door. There's a large gap under the door, perhaps 2 inches, between the bottom of the door and the floor. Above the door is a glass transom, which looks as though it can't be opened from this side. Duranda tries looking through the keyhole, but it seems blocked by something. However, by standing on his tiptoes, Bivitar is just able to see through the grated window. There's a golden helmet in there, Bivitar tells Duranda. It must be the helm of Zork. It's absolutely dazzling. It's resting on a pedestal in the center of the room. There's a mirror on the far wall of the room. I can see myself peeking through the window, and I can see what's blocking the keyhole. The key is in the keyhole on the other side of the door. We've got to get past this door, Biv. Try to figure out a way to get through the locked door, keeping in mind the items found while exploring the castle. When you think you have a way, then turn to the next page. All right. There you have 5 different options here, but before I read them to you, let's see. What do we have, comm friends? Do we have any good ideas? All right. Adam D. thinks we could use a spell to become small and go under the door. I like that idea. I don't know how we can undo the spell, though, and get big again and get the key, or, you know, not be small. But a good idea. Can you do that trick where you knock the key out onto paper and slide it under? You know, I was thinking that, maybe using the letter opener. Do we have paper? We have an explosive. I mean, we could just blow up the door. Yeah, says Morse code media. All right, let's see what we got. We have the following 5 options. We can use the ladder to reach the glass transom. We can use the doormat and the letter opener to get the key from the other side of the door. Ah, the doormat. That's like a paper. Yes. Good job, Elwin. Good call. Use the shrinking spell to get under the door. We can go to page 108 for that. Use the explosive to blast down the door, 110. And if you couldn't think of a way to get through the locked door, go to 112. All right, which one do we like most? Do we want to blow it up? You want to use the shrinking spell? Or do you want to use the doormat and letter opener? I think the doormat idea seems to be gaining traction here. All right, let's go to 104. All right. Biv, remember the mystery we read last year in English class? Remember how that detective got through the door that was locked from the inside? You mean the one where he put a placemat under the door to catch the key as it fell from the lock? Right. We could use the doormat I found to do the same thing with this door. What a great idea, Juren. Let's try it. Duranda slides the doormat halfway through the space under the door, positioning it just under the lock. Then she pokes the letter opener into the keyhole. There's a faint thud and a tiny cloud of dust rises from the doormat. Duranda slowly pulls the doormat out from under the door, and sitting right in the middle of the mat is a rusty iron key. You're a genius, Durin, I mean Elwin. Bivitar slaps her gleefully on the back, then picks up the key and easily unlocks the door. They enter the room and gasp at the shining radiance of the golden helm of Zork. Duranda gingerly picks up the helm, turning it from side to side to admire its beauty. And suddenly a cold wind blows through the room. The wooden door slams shut behind them. They whirl around to see Juren floating in the air behind them. For once, his face is unsmiling, but frozen in a mask of cold hatred. It speaks in a voice dripping with malevolence. Your victory now turns sour. The helm's not yours for long. 'Twill be buried with this tower when the whirlwind sings its song. This time, the creature fails to disappear after finishing its cryptic message. Instead, its sucker-covered tail begins to whip back and forth faster and faster. From outside the room comes the sound of a powerful wind wailing round and round the turret. The floor of the room begins to quaver as the noise of the wind rises to a crescendo. Bits of mortar from the ceiling crumble down on top of them. The tower's collapsing, screams Duranda, barely making herself heard above the roar of the wind. The bead! Use the magic bead! Yells Bivitar. All right. Do you have the magic spell for stealing power of the wind? If so, go to page 68. If you don't, but want to stay here in the tower of the ruined castle anyway, go to 114. And if you want to use the magic bead to return to the castle of Zork, go to 116. All right, we do not have the magic spell for stealing the power of the wind. I have no idea where we would have gotten that from. Everything else we didn't choose killed us, but so be it. Do we want to stay, or do we want to use the bead? Let's see. Oh, Moondoggy abstains. Letter opener, doormat. Yes, you're right, Christy. The letter opener on the doormat was very shadow-esque. Magic beans can generate a powerful wind. Points, Gryffindor. All right, 116. Let's take the bead and see how it takes us here. Geranda reaches into her tunic pocket and grabs the bead. She dashes it against the stone floor. A swirl of colored light surrounds the two adventurers. It grows brighter and brighter until they're forced to cover their eyes. Suddenly the light is gone, and they're standing in Siavar's chamber in the castle of Zork. Logramether leaps from his chair at Siavar's bedside. You found the helm. Fluttering frobenoids, you two are amazing. This treasure has defied the greatest adventurers for centuries, and you two find it in the wink of an eye. How is Siavar? Asked Bibitar. Logramether's excitement fades instantly. He's very bad. His condition worsens hourly. He looks off into the distance, and Bibitar spots a tear forming in the corner of his eye. Logramether takes the helm from Geranda and says, I must leave at once. Quendor is a day's journey, and the conference begins at midday tomorrow. He glances at Siavar. It hurts me to leave my father, knowing I may never see him again, yet I know that I'm doing what he would want. After a brief hesitation, Logramether adds, If my father should die before the treaty is signed, all we have done will be for naught. The assembled leaders would feel the passing of so great a wizard and would know my charade. It would mean the end of Quendor and all that Siavar has worked for. I ask one final favor. Stay here and watch after my father, as I wish that I could do. We will, Logramether, says Geranda. Logramether strides out of the room, and as he descends the stairs, they hear him calling for his swiftest steed. The next day, Bibitar and Geranda are sitting by Siavar's side when the healer enters to examine him. Siavar is almost as pale as his white silk bedsheets, and his breathing is shallower and irregular. After a brief examination, the healer motions them to the other end of the room. He's taken another turn for the worse, the healer begins. He will not last the night. Isn't there anything we can do? Asks Bibitar. There's only one thing we could try. Our alchemists have been working day and night, developing a procedure of potions and magical spells that might work to save Siavar. What are we waiting for? Wait, cries the healer, and listen. This procedure is completely experimental. It has not even been tried in the alchemist's test animals. Oh, boy. Test animals, huh? It could help Siavar, or it could kill him on the spot. Logramether has left Siavar in your care. The decision is up to you. Do we forbid the healer the use of this experimental procedure, or do we allow it? I feel like somehow we have gotten ourselves into a moral conundrum. Let's see, I'm going to have a drink while you guys figure this out. Human trials. Yes. The right to try, right? All right. We're drinking. I mean, we're poisoning him. I mean, we're giving him potions. Without this experimental treatment, Siavar will die, says Geranda. I say we give him permission. Bibitar nods. Even though it's risky, it's the only chance he has. The healer asks Bibitar and Geranda to wait outside the room while he and his assistants work. Muffled noises like tiny explosions can be heard through the closed door. Occasionally, bursts of light, accompanied by strange odors that burn the nostrils, stream through the cracks around the door. After what seems like an eternity, but was in fact less than an hour, the healer opens the door and motions them inside. Siavar is still lying in bed, deeply unconscious. However, there is color in his cheeks again, and his breathing is deep and regular. It is too early to say anything with certainty, explains the healer, but I think that Siavar will now recover. Several hours later, Logramether rides into the courtyard of the castle, treaty in hand. The helm of Zork fooled everyone at Quendor, he calls to them, waving the treaty. They really thought I was Siavar. The next day, Siavar regains consciousness. For the first time since his battle with the Grawl, Loggermother tells him all that transpired during his illness. Sivar calls Bivitar and Duranda to his bedside. Beaming, he humbly thanks them for their courageous help. "I love you as I love my own son," he said. "We love you too," says Duranda, sniffling a bit. "Congratulations for the Treaty of Gwendor," adds Bivitar, sniffling even more than Duranda. "You deserve the congratulations as much as I do," says Sivar. "Return again to see the blossoms of the seed that we have planted at Gwendor." He nods, and they suddenly find themselves behind the dugout of the ball field back home. Once again, they're wearing their uniforms. The sky is clear, and the game is still in progress. One of their teammates spots them as they slip back in the dugout. "Hey, Bill, June, I can't believe you guys ran off during that lightning storm. It only lasted 5 minutes. What a pair of cowards." Bill, smiling knowingly at June, asks, "What inning?" "Bottom of the ninth. We're behind by 2 runs. 2 outs already, and Ed's at bat." Ed is the weakest hitter on the team. Just then, Ed lines the ball into deep left field, legging it out for a double. "June," yells Coach Rock, "quit napping and get up to the plate. Bill, you're supposed to be in the on-deck circle." The pitcher, who seems rattled by the sudden extra base hit, throws 4 pitches into the dirt to June, and she drops the bat and trots down to first base. Bill steps up to the plate. The first pitch is far outside, but Bill swings anxiously at it. "Strike one!" cries the umpire. "Let him walk you," yells Coach Rock from the dugout. The next pitch is right down the heart of the plate. Bill, still slightly shaken, takes it for strike two. "Concentrate, Bill," the coach yells. The pitcher tosses the ball toward the plate. Bill connects solidly with the ball. It sails high into the air over the outfield. The center fielder runs back toward the fence. He leaps for the ball. It nips the edge of his glove and falls over the fence for a home run. Coach Rock is waiting as June and Bill cross the plate with the tying and winning runs. "Way to go," he says, slapping them on the back. "I guess you two will have something to talk about for a while, eh?" The end. Your score is 10 out of a possible 10 points. Congratulations. You would make a fine adventurer. You all would, people of Calm. Thank you very much. I'm going to go have a coughing fit right now, but I'm going to leave you with some music. So, yeah, I'll be back.
Something pulls me right back. miss you, but you don't own me, you wouldn't want to. I'm sorry, Matthew, but it's how it's gonna be. I'm sorry, Matthew. It's only Monday, won't you step out the scene? I'm going my way. It's so easy.
Yeah. Is it ever gonna be enough? Is it ever gonna be enough? Is it ever gonna be enough?
Hey, I'm in love. My fingers keep on clicking to the beating of my heart. Hey, I can't stop my feet.
I'm gone. So- is calling us. We're breaking free. I'm curious. I need to see. Like a flash before our eyes, we're all ready.
Everybody for tuning in tonight. I'm glad we were able to get so many listeners, even when I was only able to do the reading for half the time. I do appreciate it. For everybody in comm, thanks so much. We got, what, like 16 people, I think? Adam D, Chris Diotristi, Morseco Media, Ulcer, JWH, Bob Johnson, Dokuja, Koenig, Zalbrium, Snardusk, of course, Elwin with the brilliant save, the doormat, good stuff, Cat, Gumlog, Moondoggy, C25L, thanks for joining right at the end here, I appreciate it, everybody, I love doing the show, I hope my voice is back next week, we can resume some Romeo and or Juliet, and crush the Romeo storyline. I've got a couple other Choose Your Own Adventure books lined up. We're going to have a good old time. All right, everybody, enjoy the music.
Almost forgot the shout out. Everybody, get on Gopher. It's amazing. Here's Massive Attack with Heat Miser from forever ago. Is this on Blue Lines, I think? No. I don't remember anymore. Enjoy.